In this lecture of Unit 8, Component 2, we will discuss privacy, confidentiality, and security. In this unit, we will define these several important terms, then discuss why there are concerns about privacy and security related to health information. We will then look at tools for protecting health information. Finally, we will discuss the Health Insurance Portability and Accountability Act, or HIPAA, regulations and what additions have been made in the High-Tech Health Information Technology for Economic and Clinical Health Act legislation. Let's begin with definitions. It is important to distinguish between privacy and confidentiality. Privacy is your right to keep information to yourself. Your ability not to have to disclose private things about yourself. Confidentiality, on the other hand, is your right to keep information about you from being disclosed to other people. When you vest confidentiality in a physician and a healthcare system, you expect them to not disclose information about yourself to others, to keep it confidential. Security is the activity of protecting your personal information. Individually identifiable health information, or IIHI, is any data that can be correlated with an individual. For example, information in a medical record or a database somewhere that can be linked up to an individual. A related term is personal health information. This is individually identifiable health information as defined explicitly by the HIPAA privacy rule in the United States. Finally, the last term to be defined is consent. Consent is actually a broader term, but we will define it here in the context of privacy. When you give consent to the healthcare system, you are giving them written or verbal permission to allow use of your individually identifiable health information for the activity of providing you healthcare, or for your participation in a research project or a related activity. In the remainder of this lecture, we will talk about concerns about privacy and security. We will discuss tools for protecting security in the following lectures. First, we will focus on concerns about privacy and will discuss the notion of personal privacy versus the common good. We will talk about disclosures of personal health information and will look at some of the concerns that the public has about the privacy of health information. We will then make a few comments about de-identified data. Let's consider the notion of personal privacy versus the common good. There truly is a spectrum of views here, oftentimes reflecting one's underlying political beliefs. At one end of the spectrum is the view that while personal privacy is important, there are some instances when the common good of society outweighs personal privacy. An example that is often given is biosurveillance. Whether it is monitoring emerging natural diseases or things like bioterrorism, we can intervene and respond to these threats earlier when we have more information. Another example is clinical research. The more we are able to do clinical research, the better our ability to provide quality health care. The other end of the spectrum holds that personal privacy trumps everything. That there should really be no reason to violate one's privacy without explicit consent. Some of the organizations that are prominent in promoting this point of view include the Privacy Rights Clearinghouse, that is written specifically about medical information, even though they deal with broader privacy rights topics. Another group is called PatientPrivacyRights.org. and is headed by Dr. Deborah Peel, a Texas psychiatrist who is very well known and outspoken on personal privacy. Some of the concerns that are well demonstrated in a video that was produced in 2004 by the American Civil Liberties Union, to which a link is provided. In this video, a pizza restaurant has access to customers' medical information, and they penalize them for things like ordering extra cheese when their cholesterol levels are shown to be high. It is a video worth watching, even though it takes a very specific point of view. Others have called for a more balanced approach between personal privacy and the common good. Some articulations of this are from the California Healthcare Foundation and the American College of Physicians. Both of these documents are worth looking at if you're interested in this topic. As with many ethical issues, there are no explicitly right or wrong answers, and each individual has to decide where their views fit in. However, our political process will more than likely determine how we balance this, no matter where your views fall on that spectrum. It is important to know about patient information disclosure and how to prevent it from happening in the future. Let's look at some examples and related issues. There have certainly been disclosures when information ends up on the open internet, and it is then picked up by various applications or search engines like Google. So if information about an individual is put onto a web page, Google, in its efforts to index the entire World Wide Web, will pick up those pages, and then people can find them by submitting a search. Google picks up anything that is out there, unless you explicitly tell it not to. It also picks up database query forms, and those databases may not be as well protected as they should be. This is another way that information gets disclosed. There are many, many stories of information disclosures. One that is particularly egregious happened in Portland, Oregon, where on New Year's Eve, an individual left in his car a bunch of discs, backup tapes, and other media that contained the records of about 365,000 patients who were seen by a visiting nurse association. This naturally received a lot of press and demonstrated the need to be careful and not, for example, leave items in your car, especially if they contain personal health information. The Veterans Administration system has had a number of episodes, probably the largest of which was when a laptop with the data of over 1 million veterans was stolen. The laptop was recovered, and it appeared that the data was not accessed, but of course, no one knows exactly what went on with the machine when it was in the hands of those who stole it. The Healthcare Information and Management Systems Society, HIMSS, Analytics has looked at various aspects of disclosure. This report says that aggregated data in hospitals and healthcare facilities are the richest source of information, which can also be used for fraud and abuse. In 2006 to 2007, they documented exposure of more than 1.5 million names. As we will discuss more when we get to HIPAA, the HITECH Act increases the penalties and requirements of the HIPAA legislation. And now, any breach or any disclosure of information of more than 500 individuals must be publicly reported both on the Department of Health and Human Services website as well as to local media. If you go to the website listed on this slide, you can scroll through the list of 500-plus person breaches that have occurred. As you can see, this is a recurrent problem. Until recently, many healthcare organizations were not well prepared for security. Protecting information had not been a major thrust of what they did, and they were not well prepared for security. However, as healthcare delivery requires electronic systems, security will need to be increased. A report by Deloitte, the consulting firm, looked at security issues in healthcare organizations and came to the following conclusions. The primary threat to information is data leakage, or data that gets out in the routine care of patients. The report also concluded that identity and access management is a top priority. The trend towards outsourcing of IT in healthcare organizations raises many third-party security concerns. The role of the Chief Information Security Officer or Chief Security Officer in most healthcare organizations, particularly large ones, then takes on greater significance. Every decision about information systems needs to be assessed from the standpoint of security. This report also found that despite the increasing complexity of the security environment and the growing number of regulations, the budgets of financially strapped healthcare organizations were not keeping pace with security needs. Another report by HIMSS reached roughly the same conclusions. Healthcare organizations in general are not keeping pace with security threats and readiness. And of course, technology can worsen the problem. Wright carried out a small but widely cited study where he looked at the USB drives that we commonly plug into our computers, sometimes called thumb drives. These drives run a program that enables their use when they are plugged in, and that program can be modified to extract data from the computer. So if that computer has personal health information on it, the thumb drive can basically copy it off the computer. There are many people who have developed personal health record systems based on tools like Microsoft Access, which has some encryption functionality, but is very easily compromised. Another interesting analysis found that 10% of hard drives sold by secondhand retailers in Canada had remnants of personal health information on them. When we dispose of computers, we often do not completely wipe clean the hard drives, and so the next user may be able to access that information if they know how to extract it. One question to ask is, what is the role of governments in protecting privacy and confidentiality? We will start by looking at the United States and then move to other countries. In the United States, the Government Accountability Office has criticized the U.S. government for its inaction in protecting data in its own health-related systems and in developing policies for protecting that data. The National Center for Vital and Health Statistics, or NCVHS, has weighed in over the years on a number of privacy and security issues. In 2006, they released a set of 26 recommendations for policies concerning health privacy for the nationwide health information network. They have released further recommendations for personal control of health information and again called for a consistent and coherent policy. Another activity has been the HPSI effort, the Health Information Security and Privacy Collaboration, a project funded by the government that looked at 42 states and territories and assessed their various approaches and laws to privacy. They found a wide range of privacy policies and concluded that this makes a nationwide approach difficult because of the sometimes conflicting laws. There probably needs to be more harmonization of privacy laws, especially as we develop health information exchanges that move personal health information across state lines. The Department of Health and Human Services did release a nationwide privacy and security framework in 2008, and it covered the topics listed here: individual access, correction of information, openness and transparency, individual choice about who gets access to what information, some of the limitations on collection use and disclosure of information, data quality and integrity safeguards, and accountability. Not surprisingly, depending on where you are on the personal privacy versus common good spectrum, some people believe that the framework did not go far enough. To continue this discussion, the Department of Health and Human Services has now laid out an approach whereby they identify stakeholders with regards to preferences for access and exchange of personal health data, and then develop policy around that. The United States is not the only government that has been addressing privacy. In fact, the European Commission has devoted even more efforts to protect individual privacy. Their Directive 9546EC is a set of pretty stringent rules that essentially allows data processing only with consent, or in some highly specific circumstances such as a legal obligation, or what they define as a public necessity, usually revolving around public health. The countries that implement this directive provide examples of how consent around information could be used for efforts in the United States in the nationwide health information network. There are a number of related issues for medical privacy. One of these issues, and again, there is no right or wrong answer here, is who owns medical information. As the articles by Hall and Rodwin point out, historically, whoever owned the medium that the information was put on was considered to be the owner. For example, If you had an office practice or hospital and had paper charts, you bought and owned the paper, so it was presumed that you own the information on that paper. However, in the electronic era, information freely moves across networks from one system to another, and it becomes a little less clear who actually owns it. In fact, a growing view is that the patient owns their own information. As the amount of information increases, there is an increased economic value to health systems, pharmaceutical companies, and others who may want to use that data for various purposes. The article by Rodwin, in particular, argues that when there is an economic advantage gained by the use of that information, then at least some of that gain should be shared back to the patient. Another concern is compelled disclosures of information. That is, even though our laws and regulations may highly protect information, we may sometimes compel individuals to disclose information for non-clinical care reasons in the healthcare setting. We need to be aware of requiring individuals to disclose information that is not really being used for health-related activities. Another growing issue concerns the human genome, which may be a person's ultimate personal identifier. We talked about personal identifiers in a previous unit, but your genome is what makes you an individual. Individual genes and the variation that they have from others' genes are unequivocally unique to you. We may try to de-identify health information, but with genomic information, we may easily be able to identify an individual. Access to the genomic information manifests itself in a number of ways. For example, we can identify a person's genome by the genomic information in their siblings. There are a growing number of genome-wide association studies where an attempt is made to associate variation in an individual's genome with different diseases. There is actually a requirement for researchers to put this data in public databanks, although usually the individual personal information is protected, with the exception of the researchers who can legitimately get to that information. It is not too difficult to identify who the individual is from that data. So as we move forward with genomics and personalized medicine, more privacy issues will come to the fore. We also have a public that is concerned about privacy. Two surveys done in 2005 asked individuals to weigh the benefits between electronic health records and privacy risks. Certainly, most people are concerned about sensitive health information, although people still want electronic health records. The second of these studies also found that consumers were generally unfamiliar with HIPAA, even though most of them have signed things like the Notice of Privacy Practices required by HIPAA. Some organizations have tried to develop a set of rights with regards to information. The American Health Information Management Association has developed its Health Information Bill of Rights. This includes rights such as being able to access your health information free of charge and during the course of your treatment, and the right to expect that the information is as accurate and complete as possible. You or your personal representative should be able to know who provides, accesses, or updates your information, except in some circumstances when precluded by law or regulation. You should have the right to expect that the healthcare system will be held accountable for your information, and any violations will be prosecuted appropriately. You should expect that protections will be made available and be applied to your information, no matter where your care occurs. And finally, that you have some private legal recourse in the event that your information is disclosed, especially when it causes harm. Another approach to protecting individual health information, more in the context of personal health records, comes from a coalition called HealthDataRights.org, which is mainly comprised of companies who produce electronic health records and personal health records, such as Microsoft and Google. When you hear about data being de-identified, this refers to the removal of personally identifying characteristics of data, such as name or address, or some of the other fields that make up personal health information. However, it turns out that de-identified data is not always as secure as we may think. One researcher who has brought this to light and has received notice in the popular press is Dr. LaTanya Sweeney. When she was completing her PhD at MIT, she did a widely cited study that essentially identified William Weld, the governor of Massachusetts at the time, from information found by linking up to publicly available data sources. Her research also showed that 87% of the U.S. population could be uniquely identified by their 5-digit zip code, gender, and date of birth. So when we start to combine relatively common data elements, we can quickly get to individuals. In the case of William Weld, she was able to access a health insurance database for state employees, and Governor Weld was obviously a state employee. And she was also able to purchase the voter registration list for the city of Cambridge, Massachusetts, where he lived. She then combined these two databases, linking up the zip code, gender, and date of birth, and was able to identify the governor, as we will demonstrate further in the next slide. We have already talked about genomic data that can be generated in clinical research studies, and some recent research that showed how Social Security numbers of individuals can be predicted from public data because so many data sets have Social Security numbers. This slide demonstrates how Governor Weld was identified. On the left is the so-called de-identified state employee health database, which had things like state employees' ethnicity, visits to healthcare providers, diagnosis, procedures, medications, and charges. It also had their zip code, date of birth, and gender. The Cambridge Voter Registration Database had name, address, registered party affiliation, and the same zip code, date of birth, and gender. Governor Weld was one of those 87% who had a unique combination of zip code, date of birth, and gender. So Dr. Sweeney was able to take Weld's voter registration information and then access his entire medical information. This was picked up by the national media and at the time caused quite a stir. Let's look at concerns that people have about security. One of the ways to protect privacy is to make information more secure. So what concerns do people have about security? In the following slides, we will look at the many points of leakage in the system. We need to remember that this is a problem for paper system too, so it is not unique to electronic systems. We will talk about some of the consequences of poor security, and then the related topic of medical identity theft. As anyone who works in the healthcare setting knows, there are many points where information can leak out of the system. This figure, from Rheinfleisch, shows how information flows through the healthcare system. It is first generated in the provision of patient care by healthcare providers and clinics and hospitals. Information then flows to healthcare support activity, such as payers of healthcare, the insurance companies that reimburse, quality reviews, as we increasingly measure the quality of care delivered, and other types of administration. There are also what Rheinfleisch describes as social uses of information, everything from insurance eligibility to reporting to public health authorities and using data in medical research, although it is regulated now by HIPAA, more so than when this figure was published. There are also commercial uses of information, things like marketing, participating in managed care organizations that may use data for various purposes to try to improve the quality or efficiency of the care they deliver, and the monitoring of drug usage. There are many points along the way where information can leak out of the system. It is always important to remember that even though the concerns about privacy and security are heightened with electronic systems, paper records have their own set of privacy and security problems. In fact, some have argued that they may be more prone to breaches of security and disclosure. Unlike electronic systems, it is very difficult to audit the trail of a paper chart. We just do not know where the chart goes, who has looked at it, unlike most electronic systems that will record at least which login has looked at a particular piece of information. We also have issues with fax machines. Even in this electronic era, many still rely on fax machines to move information. When the paper comes out of fax machines and are put into a basket, anyone can view this document. We do not always know where this information goes. Records also continue to be copied. We photocopy for many reasons. The patient goes to a new provider. The insurance company needs to have documentation that a specific procedure was done or referral was made. And records get abstracted by individual people. Whether they are paper or electronic, records are copied for things like research or quality insurance. Most healthcare insurers belong to something called the Health Information Bureau, which monitors for insurance fraud. They have developed a huge database of individuals' healthcare claims, looking very properly for health insurance fraud, but also collecting quite a bit of information on individuals' personal health. Aware of the consequences of poor security, Rheinfleisch pointed out in the late 1990s that patients do various things to protect their security. They avoid seeking health care. They lie, so things will not end up in their charts. Healthcare providers have concerns about security, so they may avoid entering sensitive data that could be important in the care of that patient by others, and they also devise workarounds to entering that information. A California Healthcare Foundation survey of consumers found that 13% engaged in activity that they called privacy protective, and that these were activities that might put their health at risk, such as asking a doctor to leave out a diagnosis, perhaps to prevent someone from knowing that they have a certain diagnosis. They also may pay for tests out of pocket because they do not want to submit an insurance claim, knowing that when a claim is submitted, the insurance company then knows that the test was done. They may even do things like invoicing their regular doctor for some problems because they are trying to protect their privacy over some piece of information. A final security concern is medical identity theft. This is a growing concern, especially as more information is available electronically. It emanates from the problem that we have in society of general identity theft. But medical identity theft is defined as the use of individually identifiable health information for obtaining access to property or services. When this happens, the victims are not only individuals whose medical records have been compromised, but also health providers, health plans, and society at large that pays for health care. So there are many victims of medical identity theft. AHIMA has determined that the value of medical identity information is much higher than just the kinds of things that people use for identity theft, like a social security number. The Department of Health and Human Services has also addressed this problem and has developed a report that outlines various approaches to prevention, detection, and remediation of medical identity theft.